Barry, hey, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Glad to be here, guys.
Barry, why don't you go ahead and tell them, you know, a little bit about your past roles, and then go ahead and let's talk about what you're currently doing.
Sure. So, very solid. I'm a crop protection territory manager with GrowMark, which gives me the opportunity to visit with several member companies across central northern Illinois and up into Wisconsin, and really just talk about crop protection as a whole from not just the herbicide aspect, but also foliar nutrition, seed nutrition, and so forth. And then prior to that, there was time spent with Syngenta as an agronomist covering kind of the Midwest. I was the key account agronomist with Syngenta, so GrowMark was my key account, and spent several years there and a little time ahead of that in the seed industry as well as in farm management. So kind of a varied background there.
Well, that just makes you all that more qualified to talk.
We'll find out, huh?
Yeah. So, Barry, Eric and I have already went through and talked about different seed treatments, both, you know, corn and beans and some of the do's and don'ts, I guess, if you will. But you had some products that maybe like over treatments even that you wanted to talk about, and particular on corn anyway. Let's start with corn, zinc and manganese.
Yeah, if you think about it, a lot of times when we start thinking about starter fertilizer, one of the things that folks really like to add to their starter fertilizer is zinc. And I know not every grower is set up to have starter fertilizer, but they would still like to get some of the benefit that you can get out of that zinc early, which is to kind of initiate some of that germination and really get the seed off to a more uniform stand, which is really what we're after, right? So how can we do that? And there's a lot of different things coming forward here with seed treatments that'll give us the opportunity to over-treat corn and get a little zinc directly on that seed so that each kernel has the opportunity to imbibe some zinc as well when it's pulling in that water and getting started.
No, that's great. I was going to say, last episode we talked about starters and one of the downfalls was just the high cost of entry. So, you know, like you referenced, this might give the average grower that doesn't want to make investment into the starter system to take advantage of some of that early development with the addition of zinc. And so what does what's the product that you would be looking at?
Well, there's a lot of different avenues you can go down here, and you can over-treat your seed in kind of like doing a box-to-box type treatment where you over-treat with zinc, and then you can add some other products as well. And then there's other times you can simply do an at-planting planter box treatment. So we can do both, and we look at both in the GrowMark system. We use a product called Flotegic and has a nice load of zinc on it for that planter box type application. And then, we have a Pro Emerge system that is a set of products that goes on if you're going to do box to box. So you would put on probably more than zinc in a situation like that.
Well, that sounds good, Barry. Now, what about as far as you said corn over treat? Should growers be concerned about, over-treating something that's already been treated? Is there any risk factors as far as that treatment maybe being the original, like, manufacturer treatment being washed off?
That is a good question, because it's not, if you're going to over-treat corn, it's probably not something you're going to do yourself. Not in all likelihood. Now, you might be set up with on your farm to be able to do a box-to-box treater, but most growers aren't going to have that ability, and you'd want to work with somebody that is pretty well versed in doing seed treatments, because seed treatments can be pretty fickle. And the one thing you're going to find out is that as you add products to the seed in a box-to-box type application, you can actually increase that seed weight a little bit. And then you have to think through, all right, how does that affect me at planting, making sure that I have the slickness and the flowability that I want, and indeed on top of that, the pressure to keep those seeds planting at the right rate, and you're not getting, you know, with the skips and the doubles and the things like that we're always trying to avoid.
So now, Barry, is there anything besides maybe a nutritional that you might want to consider on the seed
Well, hey, let's go back just a little bit here. You said zinc and manganese. I'm wanting to know why these two specific nutrients, because there's other nutrients we can put out there, but those are two that you kind of highlighted on. So, I mean, what's that bringing to the plant as far as, a benefit or a crop function?
Zinc's pretty important early on. We think early on in that corn plant, what things can have an impact on germination and early growth specifically, zinc relates to auxins. Auxins relate to roots. And so that's a direct path you can correlate right there. When you think about things like manganese on corn, that's about stress mitigation. And so those soils where you have some tight soil, some higher clay content, maybe some compaction, or you're planting excessively early, or you're planting and you're really shooting for the moon on yields, and so you're pushing populations or things like that. You might want something on there to help mitigate stress, and the manganese will help with that. So there'll be a couple of examples as to how those nutrients work early on in a corn plant.
Okay, very good. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you know offhand, kind of off the cuff, generally what kind of ROI or yield advantage we could potentially see from this?
Well, an easy one for me would be to relate back to that Flotegic product I talked about there a second ago on the corn. So what we've seen through the Growmark system in trials is multi-year data showing about 3.7 bushel advantage. And if you look at a product like that, it typically costs, right around a third of a bushel to put that on. So your return on investment is really high in a situation like that.
Okay. So, Barry, is there anything else that we might consider for something additional to your standard F&I? We heard you told us about some nutritionals. Is there anything else we might want to consider?
Yeah, for me on corn, I love the concept of getting PGRs, so plant growth regulators. So your listeners will probably hear folks talk about PGRs, and let me break that down as to what that is. That is a plant growth regulator that oftentimes is either applied again, in furrow with a starter fertilizer, or now as we've become more familiar with them and their abilities, we found ways to get those applied over top of the corn seed itself. So again, it's a nice option for those guys who don't have starter. And those PGRs typically they're consisting of cytokinin, endobutyric acid, and gibberellic acid. And those three components will push growth. And they'll push it not just root growth, but they'll push growth above ground as well, so that you can get to that early season pop that you're after. You can, with a PGR on the seed, sometimes you get a similar looking effect as to a starter fertilizer. And, if you think about starter fertilizer, it almost always looks better. Now, whether it always pays or not, or whether it's always the right thing for you or not, that may be a different topic, but early on, you almost always see a little bit more aggressive root and then a little bit more aggressive above ground plant. So it might reach those early V stages just a little bit quicker and a little more uniform. You could get to a similar effect by applying a PGR to the seed. And that's a pretty cool thing to be able to take advantage of.
Now, Barry, last time our listeners heard us talk about starter fertilizers and listen to Craig and I kind of, where we might position starters. And we informed the growers that, starter fertilizer should maybe be more positioned towards those tougher, challenging conditions, say the early planting to corn on corn situations or the no-till corn situations. Would some of these corn seed treatments kind of fall into that same category, or are they going to be beneficial throughout the planting season?
Yeah. I think that as we move forward and what we're kind of seeing, we're seeing guys more consistently not satisfied with the yield that they've got, but looking for another way to grab 4, 5, 8 bushels, right? And if that's the environment you're in and that's the attitude you've got, is that I want to grow yield. I want to try to do all the little things to pick up incremental yield increases to push me to whatever my personal best might be. I really believe that these kinds of seed treatments and over treatments are going to be a part of that equation to get you there. So I think you're absolutely right. You're going to probably pay bigger and quicker in a stress environment because they alleviate stress and they help that plant get off to a great start. But I also think that they have a role anytime you're trying to make that next jump in yield. I think they're part of that equation, or they could very well be for you.
And we talked about this a little bit. I just want your take on this, Barry. We kind of started the show off by talking about there's only so much real estate on a seed for seed treatment. What are your thoughts? I mean, are we getting to a point where we're going to start throwing too much on these seeds, or?
No. Again, that is a good thought, and it's part of that process is figuring out as I'm applying. So we've talked a bit about corn, and the thing about corn is that it comes to us treated already, and then we can think through, do we want to over-treat and how much and the impact that'll have. And the things I've talked about thus far, probably just fine. I haven't had any issue in not just getting it applied, but also having it plant and flow just fine. Then you maybe think about soybeans. Sometimes in our mix on soybeans, we include a little water in that mix for flowability. You might have to tweak that equation where you don't include as much water if you wanted to include something else, something that had a bit of a PGR or biostimulant type activity on the seed. You would probably have to tweak the equation a little and not include as much water. And that would help get you the coverage that you want and the uniform coverage that you're after, while not impacting that seed coat.
Well, I think that's a good segue, Barry. Let's go ahead and talk about the soybean products. I had notes for zinc and moly, so we switched it up. Instead of manganese, we have moly.
Yeah, your zinc is going to do a very similar thing. But when it comes to the molybdenum, that's a whole different animal on the soybeans. And for me, it's back to that inherent needs of a monocot versus a dicot. The soybeans being a dicot, and actually fixing their own nitrogen, what can we do to have an impact on that? And that's where molybdenum comes in. So moly on the seed can help us get that bean, kind of initiate that process a little faster. So it's fixing its own nitrogen a little bit sooner. And if we can get that going and we can get that bean off to a little bit quicker start, a lot of times we don't talk about beans needing as uniform an emergence as corn, but that's probably, if we're truly trying to go for high yield again, it's probably not being fair to that bean plant, right? We want every plant out there to get off to as good a start as we possibly can. And the other part of this equation that we really don't give enough credit for is it can oftentimes be a race to canopy closure on soybeans.
Yeah.
So what can I do all season long to try and get to that canopy closure and close those rows? I mean, don't you guys think that's one of the issues that we almost always struggle with on beans is fighting mid and late season weed?
I was going to say, if nothing else, just for weed suppression, let alone take out the yield component.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, and I think seed treatments are, and anything we can do to the seed treatment or add on to it, that's all great, but it's all part of a bigger approach. And I think that's what you guys are doing, right? You're kind of breaking that down piece by piece to look at, what can we impact throughout the growing season. And if we have that mindset, then I think seed treatments and over treatments are part of the equation for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely seems like the buzzword right now is a systems approach. But for lack of a better term, it is very much so a systems approach. And if you take one component out of the system just doesn't work well.
But it's, a 1 and 1 equals 3 kind of a thing. And that is the case, because it seems like we start giving corn or soy either one, but we give the plants a little extra attention, they get used to it and they want that. They almost crave it, it seems like. And you continue to give it that attention throughout the season, and then come harvest time, it rewards you for that. Or that's the hope anyhow.
Yeah, definitely.
So, hey, Barry, going back to the moly, would that be a moly shine that you're referencing as far as getting that on the seed?
Yeah, I mean, primarily that's going to be an over-treatment that you'd want to do. So a moly shine would be a great way to do it, because then you're getting molybdenum consistently across from bean one to whatever the last bean is you're planting on the acre, they would all have some molybdenum directly on the seed available for it as soon as it gets going. Same way with the zinc, right? Getting it so it's on there from front to back is a nice thing. So that Molly Shine would be a great option for those guys that that maybe aren't going to have their soybeans over-treated with the Molly Shine. Then a Flotigic Molly might be an option. Again, it's one that's going to have a very similar analysis to the Molly Shine, so you get that molybdenum across your whole acre.
We played around with a foliar applied Molly last year. I mean, if we're doing this seed treatment, still could come back with some Molly over top.
I would think so. I mean, if you think about it, it's what it's doing. It's all nutrients are kind of this way, right? What they do at planting may not be the same thing they're doing later on in the season. It may be in the same vein, but it's not necessarily the exact same thing. So early on, you know, it's kind of initiating that to try and get us to where we're fixing nitrogen a little quicker. Later on, it really, you think of molybdenum as directly impact for nitrogen assimilation in the plant, the movement of nitrogen within the plant. And so you would kind of relate it that it is still nitrogen related, but how it's doing it is a little different.
Yeah. Now, Barry, now kind of shifting gears once again, we've heard a lot of things from you of different things we could do with a seed treatment. Now, being in your position, you definitely get a lot broader look at some products than maybe Craig or I do. Have you seen anything come across your desk that just definitely does not work, or that you know we want to maybe communicate to our growers is something we don't want to do with the seed as far as a treatment?
That's a loaded question, Barry.
That is a loaded question. You're asking me to unsell products. No, I'm just kidding. Well,
no, maybe not necessarily product specific, but just, you know, maybe some concepts.
I know what you're saying. It makes me want to think through that just a little bit before I put my foot in my mouth. But what I would say is that back to your earlier comment of the environments you talked through on starters and some of the environments that I talked through on seed treatments, that's probably where I would start. And then I would start to alleviate or eliminate, maybe I should say it that way, products that don't match up. So for instance, if I'm planting really late in the season, you know, for whatever reason, I am really delayed and all of a sudden it's first part of June. Well, do I have as much need on the seed for some of these products as I might later on, right? So they're probably, the soil's warm, the conditions probably at that point have changed dramatically from that planting in April. And so now the need for what I put on the seed may be completely different, and maybe these products aren't going to have the same impact, and I should take that investment and instead switch it to something on the foliar side to move that crop along faster once it's out of the ground, because it's probably going to move along pretty fast in the ground already. So there's some things like that I might think through. I also might think, you know, the earlier I go, the more I might want to stack some of these things on top of themselves. Maybe think about seed treatments on top of starters to really push my plants early if I'm aggressively planting, you know, early in the season. So that's probably what I would think through first and foremost. If that answers your question, Eric.
Yeah, it does. And that definitely falls right in line with our discussion. I think, you know, last time we discussed with starter fertilizers that I firmly believe that, you know, in the past where maybe we've seen some the inconsistencies with starter fertilizers is just maybe the time of year they were applied. And then, you know, and then obviously, you know, rates maybe didn't obviously match up with the equipment that was being used for those applications. So, you know, if a 2x2 and you're using a low gallon per acre use rate, you may not have the same effects as if you were using an in-furrow. So yeah, definitely that makes sense, Barry.
Yeah, it's so farming is not easy, and you guys know that, your listeners know that, right? There's no easy button for any of it, but it's trying to figure out, okay, for this year and in the environment that I'm going into and the way that I like to farm, these are probably the avenues that make the most sense. And I would encourage growers to think about it that way, not so much about what they hear somebody else doing on their farm, but more about, all right, that's what they're doing, and I think this is probably why it's working for them, but I do this over here, and so I might need to tweak that a bit to make it match my farming style and the environment and the soils that I'm going into. And I think that's probably the key to making these products more consistent versus just, you know, kind of grabbing and trying. I think if we think it through that way and kind of go into a planned attack, you're a lot more likely to get the results you're after.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm going to go right back to Molly Shine real quick, since that's a product we were talking about. Do you have any off-the-cuff ROI data? I always like to throw that in there because it makes these things more valid, more real.
Yeah, I don't have a lot directly on Molly Shine. What I do have is I have some data on the Flotigic Molly, which is it's kind of a – I'm from southern Indiana. We'd say it's a kissing cousin. It's kind of a kissing cousin to the Molly Shine, the Flotigic Molly would be. And but not that either one of you guys would ever kiss your cousin. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But no. Last year, what I would say is the my field trials that we did on that, so the Growmark trials on that, we're showing about a 1.7 bushel advantage to having that molybdenum on the seed. And if you think again, what is that 1.7 bushel? What does that equate to for an ROI? This is probably going to cost you, depending upon which form you get it, again, less than a third of a bushel to add this to your mix. And then if you can get that 1.7, give or take, bushels out of it, that's a real nice return on investment for a pretty minimal cost up front. And I should say this too, guys, on both of those Flotigic products last year, the win rate, and for me, win rate just isn't a positive response. It's a positive response above the cost of the good.
Yeah,
was pushing 90% on both of them. They were both in the high 80s for their win rate. So that's really nice. You can't win them all, but if you can win in the almost 90% rate, that's pretty darn good. That's hard to beat.
Well, that's real data because I've seen the exact same thing when we did our trials down here. It was very comparable, and I think my average is probably like 1.3 bushel on the Flotigic for beans, but very close, 1.3 to 1.5, so we're not too far off from the overall. Yeah. Well, Barry, is there any other products that you're thinking of, you know, as an overtreatment, either that we missed on corn or that you want to talk about in soybeans?
I think, you know, I'm going to go back to that thought I had earlier of you know, kind of keep it simple, stupid, you know, that give things just a kiss or identify things that are right for you. And so for me, I'm going to call myself the stupid one here. I like to keep things simple and concise because it makes it easier and repeatable. And that's what I'm looking for, is easier and repeatable. So the Molly Shine or the Flotigic Molly, I think I would start there. If I'm not doing that on soybeans, I would start there. On the corn, I think I would find a way. Can I get some zinc out early? And then is there a way to look at some PGRs, either in furrow or directly on the seed? I think that those are two great places to start. And then we can build off of that. But let's get those dialed in and you know, get guys seeing the success that they can have out of that and grow from there. To me, that would be a really good approach. And it kind of keeps it simple.
No, it sounds like some good on-farm discovery opportunities, I think. So, well, Barry, we do appreciate your time and all your infinite wisdom. I think we'll wrap it up and let you get back on the road there. So,
thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Barry. Eric, what'd you think? I really enjoyed talking to Barry. He's a pretty interesting guy and got a lot of knowledge.
Yeah, Barry's got just a wealth of knowledge. And we are very fortunate here at LionFest that we've got some great resources to lean on like Barry from time to time.
Well, and guys that, you know, came from the industry, it's not like they were just started out Growmark and or FS and, you know, been here their entire careers. They got a pretty, like Barry, you know, he had a diverse past. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, Eric, I think I would like to talk about NCGAs. And for guys that don't know, that is National Corn Grower Association. And these are just high yield. What can we crank out of the field? And the reason I want to talk about it is I'm actually sitting down. Eric and I are both sitting down going through products on farm discovery opportunities. I'm planning on doing around 8 national corn grower trials to see if we can't hit plus 300 bushel this year. So I thought it'd be fun to just do a lighthearted episode, talk about what we're doing, why we're doing it, you know, maybe some of the products that we're looking at, and again, why we're looking at those products.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I wouldn't say that we by any means have got the recipe figured out, or that, you know, we've got the silver bullet. But, and while, you know, these are, you know, a lot of times these are novel and that they're not necessarily practical, but there are some real lessons to be learned from some of these high yield contests that, you know, a lot of these products do have a lot of utility into everyday corn and soybean production. And while, you know, we've all been kind of tasked with hitting these yield target goals by, you know, say 2050, hitting consistently 300 bushel corn and 100 bushel beans, the lessons learned from these high yield competitions, I think, you know, have some real utility in how can we really achieve these yields.
Yeah, I agree, Eric. And, you know, we did these a couple years ago on beans. And again, if nothing else, we learned what was our upper threshold. And we did learn that sometimes we didn't impact. I mean, we had such a good growing year that year. There was sometimes the treatments actually didn't impact it as profoundly as we would have hoped. But again, all lessons learned. And all these products that we're putting in, we're bringing in to test individually anyway. So we've got some pretty good ideas of what these are doing. If we do throw anything in that we haven't tested, we will be testing it just to, again, bring some validity to these products before, you know, we suggest that you put them into your standard operation.
You've been listening to Field Trials Unleashed. Agronomic trials, products, practices, what makes sense for you and your farm's profitability. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some useful and practical information. Make sure to like, rate, and review, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Craig and Eric on Twitter at Trials Unleashed. From there, you can get agronomic updates and submit questions for future shows. See you next time.